back on church and culture. Austin's a good friend. He's president of CFAM, the Center for Family and Human Rights, based in New York and Washington, D.C. Very close ties to what goes on at the United Nations. It has what's called special consultative status with the U.N. Economic and Social Council. He also writes for Breitbart. Austin, welcome back to Church and Culture.
Delighted to be with you. Just one small correction. I don't write for Breitbart anymore, but I do a biweekly column at Crisis.
Oh, my magazine.
You're in the magazine no more, but yes.
My magazine. Okay, well, I'm glad you're there.
I wrote something like, I counted the other day, I wrote 560 stories for Breitbart in about 2.5 years.
Boy, that's a lot. You should archive them. I'm putting together my archive right now. Makes me tired just to look at what I did over the years.
I spitballed the number of words I've written in the last 5 years, and I think it's about 850,000.
No wonder you're a little thinner than I saw you today at lunch. You looked a little thinner than last time.
Well, I'm trying to work on that, too.
Me, too. I always am. Look, I guess I should tell our listeners that you're the head of a officially designated hate group now.
Yes.
And I should also add that you're not really a hate group. But you have been thus designated by the ultra-radical left-wing SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, along with about another 1,000 groups, including Alliance Defending Freedom, the Family Research Council. You know, basically anybody who is who upholds man-woman marriage. Are you in that basket because of the LGBT issue, or just what puts you in that basket of being a hate group?
Well, it is the LGBT issue, and we first landed on the list now several years ago because, and this is so strange, they wrote a special report on us and ADF at the time, because CFAM and ADF were down in Belize advising the government and NGOs and Christian groups about their obligations under international law with regard to sodomy laws. Belize was coming under very serious pressure from the International Commission of Jurists, very influential group, saying that Belize's anti-sodomy laws, like we used to have here, were a violation of existing international treaties. And so we were invited down to advise various groups on what international law really says about this issue, and we advised them that international law was silent on this issue, and that they could have sodomy laws or strike them down, that international law is silent on it. And because of that, we landed on the hate list for offering proper legal advice to a foreign government.
Well, is it something of a badge of honor to be on that list?
Well, it is. It is. It's a pain in the keister for various reasons that I can get into. But yeah, of course it's a badge of honor, because the Southern Poverty Law Center, I mean, if you're not on that list, you're not really doing your job. it's just a recognition by the hard left that you're doing a good job in slowing down or hampering their agenda. So in that way, it is a badge of honor. In other ways, well, it's a pain in the keister because it follows you around. You know.
Well, what bothers me, Austin, what bothers me is that the very reputable GuideStar,
yeah,
which is the go-to website to look at the viability, integrity of nonprofits.
Yeah,
they've picked this up.
Well, let me just update you on that. They picked it up briefly, and they got hammered like you would not believe. And you know, they're a relatively small NGO. They've got a budget every year, I think, of $2 or $3 million. And so they got hit with all of us, went after them, and very wise of them. The head of GuideStar actually went to Family Research Council and sat down with them for a few hours and talked over these issues. But then, you know, philanthropy, the philanthropy roundtable got involved and criticized them. And so they backed off and they took, I mean, what they had done was using SPLC's information, they would put a header across the, you know, the top of the GuideStar Family Research Council page saying designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. So it was on the home page where various groups were listed. For some reason, they didn't do that to us, but they did it to several groups. And so it was a real scarlet letter. This is a place where donors and foundations stop in to look at look at tax returns, and mostly that's the reason. And so it was a real problem. But you know what? It only lasted 2 or 3 weeks, and then they backed off. A rare victory against SPLC.
Well, someone must have put them up to it. I mean, they didn't go out and decide to be, you know, linked to the Southern Poverty Law Center. This came from outside.
Well, it came from SPLC. See, what SPLC is doing is going to, for instance, the credit card companies, and they're saying, we've got this list of hate groups. These hate groups are probably using your credit cards to receive donations, and you might want to look at it. There's a campaign called The Color of Money that is targeting groups on the SPLC list and trying to get the banks to no longer work with these groups. They've gone to Amazon, for instance, and now Amazon to join on their Amazon Smile program, which is a program, you know, one of my supporters might want to buy something from Amazon, and they can register such that a portion of whatever they buy goes to CFAM. We applied to do Smile a couple of years ago, but because of our listing at SPLC, they said you're designated a hate group and we won't do business with you. ADF just landed on that list, even though they've been on the hate list for a while.
So that's the Alliance Defending Freedom out of Phoenix, Arizona. Austin, you know, it's interesting your comment about Amazon, because just this morning, I put up the occasional review of a good book or a good recording, you know, and I was going to review a book of short stories by the late William Trevor, great Irish writer, and I was blocked. I was blocked with a message that said, you have been determined to be a biased reviewer. Now, this completely surprised me. I spent thousands of dollars on Amazon, really. And I wrote them a pretty harsh note. I expect to hear back from them. But, you know, I'm wondering if Amazon is going to start keeping people like you and me from leaving reviews under books and records and movies.
Well, you know, one of my worries, you know, being on, you know, my organization, not me personally, but my organization on the list, is I published a couple of books last year.
Right, and name them for our listeners.
One was called Fake Science, and that exposing the left's dodgy data, fuzzy facts, and I forget the rest of it. But yeah, it's a book taking apart the fake scientific claims of the left in a whole host of areas. And the other one is called The Little Suffering Souls, Children Whose Short Lives Point Us to Christ, about three children, two of whom are from Northern Virginia, who suffered greatly, died young, and brought many people to the faith. So I published these books, and the left tried to keep Amazon from selling them. They failed. But see, this is what they're doing is they're trying to stifle us in every way that they possibly can.
And did they get their foot in the door of blocking your book?
No, they did not. But I was worried, particularly given that, you know, that Amazon would not let us enter into the Smile program. Now here's what we're doing on that. And, you know, we are, here's the thing. Even the left doesn't like the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Why is that, by the way?
Well, because they know that they're shysters, that they're liars, that they're just a money factory. They've got 477. They have $477 million under management, so a lot of it in offshore accounts. They are fabulously wealthy. And that's also why nobody will go after them and sue them, because they can lay in millions of dollars in litigation against somebody who comes after them. But they are used by journalists, for instance, and corporations like Amazon, in a very lazy fashion. You know, I was asked to talk to a Washington Post reporter a couple of days ago about some things that are going on at the Fairfax County School Board, and I said, I'll talk to you as long as I have your agreement up front that you will not identify my group as designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And they refused, and so I said, well, I'm not going to talk to you then. Brain-dead leftist reporters used the Southern Poverty Law Center list to slander good people without even doing their own work.
I don't think they're brain-dead. I think it's deliberate, Austin.
Yeah.
I think they're just, they've just, you know, media for the most part has just become one basic hit group. And they're going to, you know, this Southern Poverty Law Center thing is, you know, another tool that they've come up with to try to sway public opinion in a very dramatic way against any pro-life group, pro-family group, you know, pro-America Constitution group, you name it.
Well, you know, I would like for them to do their own work, and if they want to label me a hate group, let them. But do your own work. You know, go to my website and see what we write about. You know, we're totally transparent. You can go to our website and read 20 years worth of reports that we've put out. And yes, we've been critical of the LGBT movement and their agenda. And we have fought certain issues at the United Nations for 20 years, but that doesn't make us a hate group. And I would challenge them to look at what we've actually done rather than listen to the ridiculous charges of the Southern Poverty Law Center. How can you be a hate group for offering legal advice to a foreign government about international law? How does that?
Well, because you're on the wrong list. You're on the wrong side of it, according to them. Now, let me ask you this question. What can you tell our listeners about the Southern Poverty Law Center? Didn't it have its origins in the civil rights movement?
It did. Many years ago, they were a group of lawyers that would bring cases on behalf of African Americans who were in trouble with the law or whatever. And they won some cases. It was started by a guy named Morris Dees, who is a little bit of a flim-flam man. So at this point, I'm not even sure that they ever had a good founding or good early days. Morris Dees came out of the direct, this is very funny, came out of direct mail. He was a direct mail man who started.
Was he their Richard Viguerie?
He was the left-wing Richard Viguerie.
Yeah.
He's in the Direct Mail Hall of Fame,
Whoa.
Morris Dees is. So he makes money, they make money by scaring the pants off of liberals in New York and Chicago and LA, that the white supremacists are about to take over America, when that sort of died out a little bit and they were starting to take a hit in their fundraising, that's when they changed their focus or expanded their focus to the LGBT issue, because there's a lot of rich homosexuals around the country and a lot of rich liberals, and they think that, you know, the Family Research Council wants to kill gays or whatever. And so that is what they use to frighten their donors with now.
Where else, you said it's a pain in the butt. where else has this hate group designation showed up?
Well, I was giving a lecture to a class at Catholic University now several months ago about the life and family movement and international law, specifically the United Nations. And I finished my talk, and this snot-nosed kid who had his computer open looked over the top of his computer, and he says, "I don't think you're going to like this question." I said, "Yeah, well, you know, whatever, let me have it." And he says, "How do you feel running a hate group?" So the purpose of the SPLC list is that when you Google my name, you know, Wikipedia, I've never been able to get it off.
You don't have to talk to me about Googling people's names.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's exactly. Just, you know, it's horrific.
So
if somebody wants to, you know, keep you from making friends, all they have to do is get something embedded in Google.
Yeah. So the purpose of it is so that I'm giving a lecture to some Catholic University students, and one of them is able to say that.
Right.
That's the purpose. I wrote a column at Crisis called The New Blacklist, and the purpose of this is to shut off debate. So that once he said that, there is nothing that I can say that will have any credibility or validity after that.
Right.
That's the purpose of it.
Yes. And it's also, you know, people who Google you in advance thinking to put you on a program or whatever, the whole idea is to cut you out.
Yeah.
And to isolate you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The purpose of it is also isolation. It is the new McCarthyism.
Right.
There's no question about that. Now, I am lucky because, you know, I published two books last year. I wrote for Breitbart a lot. I've done a lot of press related to the books. And so when you Google me now, that stuff doesn't come up until like the third or fourth page, which I'm told is a safe place to be.
Yeah. You know, you get past the second page.
They've got, this is kind of funny. I feel bad for our mutual friend, Joe Sella. Joe is up to be U.S. ambassador to Fiji, and he's sitting in his confirmation hearing now 2 or 3 weeks ago, and this vicious creep, Menendez, from New Jersey, who, you know, canoodles with teenage prostitutes, he's sitting there questioning Joe, and he says, "Do you know Austin Roos?" And Joe said, the look on Joe's face is priceless. "Yes, I know Austin Roos." And he takes through a bunch of these things that this organization called GLAAD has captured that I've, you know, written about or said that have been critical about gays. And he ran through a list of these things. Joe only partially threw me under the bus. But
okay.
SPLC is not the only one doing
it. He wants to be an ambassador.
Well, I mean, truth be told, I mean, I said those things, not him. But you know, but he was with you in the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast, right? How did you, you know, all that kind of business? So SPLC is not the only one. The Human Rights Campaign issued a vicious report targeting various pro-family people a few years ago, and they had these awful drawings of them that made them look like they were prisoners in jail. Including Brian Brown of the National Organization for Marriage, and Sharon Slater of Family Watch International, and several, Ben Bull of ADF. I mean, you know, really good people. So it's not just SPLC. It is the left in general that is trying to stifle any kind of sharp criticism. And the other thing that happens is that your friends run from you. I mean, Joe Sella, I joke, partially threw me under the bus, but he did. You know, and they want even your friends to move away from you because you have this scarlet letter on you.
Familiar with that one. But you're my friend, and I appreciate that. It's Google has really changed history, and especially impacted lives in a very personal way. Because once the Southern Poverty Law Center or GLAAD or the Human Rights Campaign, who went after me some years ago, put something out there, it's permanent. and it's never corrected.
Yeah.
And people then meet you, say, at a cocktail party. Oh, let me look up this Austin Roos guy.
Yeah.
And then they find all this horrible stuff about you, supposedly.
Yeah.
And then they never want to talk to you again.
You know, one of the things that Menendez asked Joe about was a joke that I repeated. I gave a talk to the Carlo Menzenti Foundation in Texas. You know them. I'm sure you spoke to them before. And during the Q&A, I was asked some question. I don't remember what it was. And I reiterated this joke that a priest from the Holy See mission to the UN said to me. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning on the floor of the UN. It was during Cairo plus five. The Clinton administration was just beating the crap out of the Holy See, and it was, you know, and he was very frustrated. And I walked up to him, and he says, "I'll tell you what, I guarantee you absolution if you take out Hillary Clinton." He paused, and not on a date. So
I like that joke.
I said this at Cardinal Menzenti, that and Catholics for Free Choice got a recording of it, and they put it in a dossier.
How'd they get a recording of it?
Well, because, you know, Cardinal Menzenti takes...
Oh, they put it up.
And right. sold them, and you're like, you know. And so Joe gets this question about that.
Wow.
This is 20 years ago. So it's like this joke told to me by a priest is going to be a part of my obituary.
Oh, it'll be, as Robert Novak told me, I had breakfast with him a few days after he was accused of, you know, leaking that CIA information about Valerie Fong. He says, "Deal, this will be the opening line of my obituary now.
Yeah.
Nothing else."
Yeah.
And but I don't think that's heavy enough to make the opening line. You still have that ahead of you. Still have that ahead of you.
The good news, as I said earlier, and I didn't complete the thought, is that those on the left have really started criticizing SPLC. A really smart takedown of SPLC was run a couple of years ago in Foreign Policy magazine, which is published by the Washington Post Company. And what they did was they went and tried to find all these hate groups, these you know, Aryan Nation hate groups that SPLC says are active in the United States, and they found that probably half of them were phony.
Don't even exist.
Half of them were phony, including one called Granny Warriors or something like that. And they couldn't find Granny Warriors. And so a lot of the SPLC list is phony. So the good news is that they're gaining some criticism from those left of center. I'm preparing a dossier of these criticisms from the left to provide for a friend of mine who is a muckety-muck at Amazon, who's going to take this and to his colleagues at Amazon and say, look, you know, they're not necessarily a reliable source for these things. I mean, they have, you know, Carl Zinsmeister from the Bush administration,
of course,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He wrote, he's the head of the Philanthropy Roundtable now, he wrote this report on SPLC when GuideStar started using them. And he found a tape of Mark Potok, one of their top guys, at some fundraising luncheon, saying that the purpose of our list is to utterly destroy our political opponents. So there's nothing objective about it. It is a political hit tool. So we hope to present a case to Amazon and others that this is not exactly the group that you want to rely upon for this kind of thing. The U.S. Army has stopped working with them. The Department of Justice has stopped working with them. Their star has begun to decline a little bit in some areas. On the other hand, after the Charlottesville riots, some months ago, Apple gave them $1 million. You know, George Clooney, I think, gave them $1 million. So that there's a lot of impressionable leftists who are still willing to give them lots of money.
Well, with $500 million in the bank, I wouldn't be wasting my money on them, even if I agreed with them.
Well, yeah, it's phenomenal. And I'm assuming that Apple had no idea they had that much money in the bank. No idea.
It must be disconcerting, though, to see yourself on a list with genuine neo-Nazi organizations.
Well, you know, and that's actually a little bit of a blessing, because we can say, you know, I'm against gay marriage. Does this make me a Nazi? So in a way, it works a little bit to our advantage, because the comparison is so nuts. And, you know, and then the ace in the hole is the fact that, you know, the SPLC list was used by an assassin to target Family Research Council. And he went in the front door of FLC,
oh, yes, I remember,
guns blazing, and was wrestled to the ground. He had a knapsack full of Chick-fil-A sandwiches that he intended to stuff into the mouths of the corpses that he made.
Chick-fil-A? How symbolic is that?
Isn't that wild? And he told the police that he was inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center's aid list.
He did wound somebody, didn't he?
Yeah, he wounded the security guard there, Leo, who's a real hero. He was able, if that guy had shot Leo, got his key card, gone upstairs, he would have caused a mass slaughter. But Leo, he shot Leo in the arm, and Leo nonetheless wrestled into the ground and stopped him.
We got to take a quick break, Austin. We're going to talk more with Austin Roos, the head of CFAM, about this issue of being labeled hate groups after this short break.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, the spiritual masters of the Eastern monastic tradition taught that we must think about our own death a few minutes each day. This may be frightening and can certainly make us wonder about the mystery of the afterlife.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO, Ave Maria Radio.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
On the next Christ is the Answer program, Father Ricardo talks with a men's group about the necessity of praying and reading Scripture. His titles are, What We Have Here is a Failure to Communicate, Prayer, Quality Time with a Father, and The Single Best Personal Trainer, Scripture. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 6, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
The first 5 years of marriage can be a roller coaster. Regardless of how long you and your spouse knew each other before the big day, marriage changes everything. For better, or sometimes for worse. Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck.
And I'm Lisa Popcheck. If you're a newlywed or someone you love is getting married, check out our book, Just Married, A Catholic Guide to Surviving and Thriving in the First 5 Years of Marriage. You can find it on the online store at AveMariaRadio.net.
Back with Austin Roos, who is head of CFAM, whose marvelous work at the United Nations and many other places, including in Washington, D.C. Austin, I understand that this hate crime project of the Southern Poverty Law Center has actually put some organizations out of business.
It has. A friend of mine ran a little organization up in New Jersey called Jonah, and it was an organ. It was like a two-man shop, and the purpose of the organization was to assist gay men, Jewish gay men, who wanted to live according to the Torah, to leave the gay lifestyle. And so they would refer these young men to counselors who would help them, you know, leave the gay lifestyle. the Southern Poverty Law Center sued Jonah in New Jersey courts for the violation of New Jersey's Consumer Protection Act. The claim being that it was fake science, if you will, that that same-sex desire could be assuaged, alleviated, or changed. And I covered that. I was in the courtroom for two solid weeks up in New Jersey. I was covering for Breitbart. And at any particular time, the SPLC people had 10, 15 lawyers there. And Jonah had won.
Who was defending Jonah?
Chuck Lemandry.
Yeah.
You know, from California, who,
right.
You know, does this kind of work. Very.
I know Chuck, yes.
Man. So, you know, they ended up losing. You know, the judge was totally in the tank for SPLC. He would not allow any testimony from experts that would say this treatment is effective. He said his judgment was it's not effective, therefore I will not hear any of your expert witnesses. It was the weirdest thing. They basically would not let Jonah make their case. And in the end, Jonah lost. They owe millions of dollars to SPLC and the quote-unquote victims. And they're out of business.
Well, they're not. These victims aren't going to get anything, I assume.
No. They're not.
Because they can't go after the individuals, only the company, right?
Well, I think that they sued not just the organization, but the individuals. But, you know, blood from a stone, you know.
Right.
They have no money. So, and they're trying to identify other, I mean, that's a big issue with the gays these days, is trying to stop talk therapy for those who have unwanted, you know, sexual desires. And so now these laws have passed in half a dozen states, maybe more.
How can you pass a law against something somebody wants to do health-wise or psychologically and emotionally?
Right. But they have. They've done it all over the country. So it is now illegal in California and a half dozen other states, maybe more. It's generally focused on minors, that anyone under the age of 18 cannot seek talk therapy for unwanted
sex attraction. This is Stalinism now, isn't it?
And in New York City, it's illegal for adults to seek talk therapy for that purpose. I don't know of another instance in this country where a reason for wanting talk therapy has been made illegal. It's the only one. You know, Sarab Amari wrote an interesting column at commentary a couple of days ago. He's the Muslim converted to Catholicism. He's
right.
Talk about it. And you know, he and Adrian Vermeule, a Harvard law professor, are talking about how, you know, the cake shop case is just so defensive. We're on defense. We're defending, you know, religious freedom. And what we need to do is not only do that, but also go on offense. And one of the offensive things that can be done is in all the states that where it's still legal, they ought to be passing laws protecting talk therapy. And put the
yes.
LGBTs on defense for once, which we haven't been very good at.
If the Southern Poverty Law Center is using the phrase hate group against us, what phrase can we use against a group like the Southern Policy Law Center?
Well, most of the people that I know just call them a hate group. And as a matter of fact...
Well, you can't call them a hate group. That's their phrase.
No, you can, because they are.
Well, but...
The American Family Association, a couple of years ago, developed a hate list of their own. And SPLC is on it, Human Rights Campaign is on it. I always, in print, refer to HRC, for instance, as the anti-Christian Human Rights Campaign, designated a hate group by the American Family Association, and they hate it. Oh, do I get mail from these guys? It's hilarious. So I just give it right back to them.
Yeah, but, you know, from a strategic public relations point of view, we ought to come up with something other than hate group, because it just sounds like, well, you called me a moron, so I'm going to call you a moron back, you know?
Well, I think that what we need to do is, you know, make these corporations, make Amazon do its own work, you know?
Yeah.
And we'll see some, and once they look at this, once they look at legitimate criticism from the center left about SPLC and begin to understand how shaky all of this is, I am convinced they will do the right thing. They may end up with a hate list of their own, but at least they won't be relying on SPLC any longer. That's my hope. And you know, there's a coalition of about 55 groups and 60 individuals that meets together on a regular basis who are the victims of SPLC. There was a conference call today, you know, just talking about the ways that we can fix this situation. And we've been successful. You know, the GuideStar situation was a great example of how to push back in an organized fashion. So, you know, we're working on it.
Well, how are you pushing back? Just give a little more detail so that, you know, listeners can understand how they can be a part of it.
Well, I don't know that listeners can. You know, here's a good example. Anytime my organization or ADF or FRC is mentioned in, you know, Reuters or the New York Times or whatever, it always says, comma, designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so what we're doing is what we did with the U.S. Army and with the Department of Justice, is going to them and saying, this is lazy and it is false. And this organization is has made all these number of mistakes, and it's phony and it's ideological, and you ought to stop relying on them. And we've had these successes, like I said, with the Army, with DOJ, the Department of Defense. So that's how we're pushing back, is the organizations that are listed are going to the folks that use this designation and trying to get them to stop. And like I said, we're working on Amazon very soon.
You think there's goodwill at Amazon on this issue?
I do. I mean, I think that they're leftists. There's no question about that. But I think that they would be appalled to know who they're relying on. You know, and I think the further you get up the food chain, the truer that will be. And I'm not going to tell you who we're going to be talking to, but it's very high up. And I think that, you know, we'll see. We'll see whether this has any effect or not.
It needs to have an effect, because actually, from Amazon's point of view, it's a bottom line. I mean, they could start bleeding customers. It's not as if they're the only group that sells online.
Well, you know, Amazon has told me they won't do business with my organization because of this, but that hasn't stopped me from using Amazon almost every day.
Well, you're like me, I know, but I mean, if they actually shut me down as a reviewer, I'm out. I'm out. I'll just go to Barnes & Noble, or I'll go to Walmart, you know, I'll just set up accounts with other people, and, you know, I'm just not going to sit around and take that.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you feel if you were me? All of a sudden, any review you write, you're too biased.
Isn't that weird? Yeah, that's quite astounding. I was listening to Rush the other day, and he said that one of his listeners had tried to log on to the Rush Limbaugh webpage from an iOS device, you know, iPhone or iPad or whatever, and they went through, you know, Safari, and when they got to the page, before they got to the page, there was a warning, you know, this is a questionable site, that kind of thing. So it's like, this is how they're coming after us. You know, it was reported today in the Daily Caller that Facebook is now using SPLC to help them identify hate groups.
Oh, are you going to meet with them too?
I don't know if that has affected any of us, but I actually don't know. I just don't know. I mean, if it does, we certainly will. But, you know, even knowing that they are working with SPLC means that somebody's got to have a meeting with them. Yeah.
But it also seems right. to me that I'm sure that
meet with everybody.
I'm sure that Google has set its algorithms to try and get that designation as high up on the feed as possible. Am I wrong about that?
Well, probably. But, I mean, but the good news for my organization anyway is, you know, the hate list thing actually does not come up at all because I think that SPLC doesn't have a lot of traffic. So it will come up through GLAAD or Human Rights Campaign or something like that. That comes actually on a Google search. That comes before anything related to SPLC. There was a blog post at SPLC that lands fairly high sometimes. You know, my organization was up for status, you know, accreditation at the UN, as you mentioned, at the top of the hour. And, you know, my quote-unquote, the blog post was, Will Austin Roos's violent rhetoric.
Well, you him out of. That's actually true sometimes.
Like about Hillary Clinton. Oh, yeah, and I also said on radio some years ago that the liberals who run higher education ought all be taken out and shot. I don't know if I told you this, but I ended up on the front page, the home page of the Huffington Post for a solid week after that happened.
They don't understand a joke, do they?
Well, they don't understand a point, you know, I forget the name, but it's funny because I was on American Family Radio. I was guest hosting. I did it all the time for Sandy Rios, and within 24 hours after that happened, and we landed on the Huffington Post, and there was just like this firestorm of criticism against me. I had to disable my Twitter account. The American Family Radio fired me as a non-paid guest host.
Seriously?
Talk about cowardly. Isn't that amazing?
Fired as non-paid.
Non-paid guest host. You are fired.
I would have thought they would stick behind you. They're, you know.
I would think so, too. It was surprising. I mean, they've had me back on their news programs many, many times since that time. But that comes up, a blog post that went up at the SPLC blog, that comes up on searches occasionally. But for the most part, all the good stuff that I've worked on over the last several years, that comes first. I'm in pretty good shape in terms of
Well, if you
search.
Keep doing good stuff,
yeah.
Then that'll keep the other from getting up into that first or second page.
That's right. That's
I don't know if our listeners realize what we're talking about, but if you deal with the Internet and you deal with Google search and other search engines, if you're an individual or a group and you don't want certain things to come up when your name or your group is searched, there are certain strategies that you have to try and keep it buried. You can't even hire companies who charge huge amounts of money to do it for you. I assume you haven't gone down that road.
Well, actually, I did.
Okay.
I hired one of those companies, but they weren't very good. They weren't very good at all. I got rid of them after just a few months.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all my Breitbart stuff happened, and my books happened, and all of that stuff moved down. So it just happened naturally.
The give us an update on what's going on at the UN that our listeners should know about.
Well, you know, we are, it's kind of funny. We have been engaged in the exact same debate at the UN today that we were 20 years ago. And that's the attempt to put the phrase reproductive health and rights or sexual health and rights in as many documents as you possibly can in order to propose that abortion is an international human right. So, you know, we had that debate, you know, 20 years ago at Cairo Plus Five when the priest made that joke about Hillary Clinton, and we had it last week at the UN. We're going to have it all summer. It's quite astounding. The other side has spent hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, and hundreds of thousands of man hours to get abortion as a global human right, and they haven't even advanced. They haven't advanced even one syllable further than what they got at Cairo 20 years ago. It is the most remarkable waste of time and money on their behalf. They have now been fighting for more than 12 years to get sexual orientation and gender identity as a new category of non-discrimination in UN documents. And sexual orientation and gender identity, they can't even get it in any document.
What countries are standing in the way of that?
It depends upon the particular debate. You know, the Holy See, certainly, but Russia will fight against that. Belarus will fight against that. Muslim countries will fight against that. You know, it just depends. We have been working very closely for the last several years with the African nations, and they've gotten very smart and very aggressive in blocking these things. So even in the last few years, we've actually been able to block reproductive health from coming into documents or having it defined as excluding abortion. So it's quite astounding.
So the pro-abortion crowd has really lost ground over the last 20 years.
I think so. You know, Ireland is really an outlier. I think, and that has everything to do with anti-Catholicism and not necessarily with abortion per se. But yeah, you know, they've lost ground in the United States. They've lost ground around the world. They've lost ground, haven't gained ground at the UN. It's amazing. And the problem with that at the UN is, you know, we spend all this time doing this and other things get ignored. You know, real things. So I know that a lot of the delegates are upset. So what's up next? I mean, we're working right now. There's a negotiation at the G7 that we're working on. And we don't work just at the UN, but we're advising the Trump administration on language for a G7 document. And I think we're going to have real good news coming out of that. And we've got a high-level political forum that's coming up this summer. It's every summer. That's where foreign ministers come in for a couple of weeks of negotiations. And, you know, and then in the fall, we got the General Assembly. And from January through spring, we've got what I call commission season, you know, the Commission on the Status of Women, the Commission on Population and Development. All of these meetings have a negotiated document. And so my guys are just super busy in helping, you know, negotiate these documents. We advise a number of delegations on language. We're in one of the most important but largely unknown fights in the world.
Well, you know, I hope it's not unknown to our listeners.
Yeah.
Because I certainly see a coverage mostly in religious and Catholic media about your fight. I think most people are aware of it, at least those who try to be aware of what's going on in the fight against the pro-aborts and the LGBTs.
I want to just tell you that somebody that we miss terribly at the UN, and who's never, there's never been a more effective negotiator at the UN than you. Say his name.
John Klink.
That's right. That's right.
Well, he misses it too.
Terribly.
You know,
for your listeners, he was the chief negotiator on these issues at the UN for 14 years, and that man could work a room like you would not believe. Sadly, the Holy See is not as aggressive today as it was in those days under then Archbishop Martino. I mean, Martino is political liberal, but man, was he a street fighter!
Oh, he was a pro-lifer though.
Holy
tough pro-lifer.
Cow. I like to say he's a guy in a bar fight who would break a bottle and hold it to another guy's neck in like a heartbeat on the life issues.
Well, Martino was an old-fashioned liberal. He, you know, he didn't hate you if you were a conservative. He'd work with you on the things that you agreed on.
Yeah, Yeah.
Do you find many of those at the UN anymore?
I would have to say no.
Sadly.
But, I mean, it's funny because these, you know, the leftists at the UN are in the bureaucracy and they hate us among European delegations and they hate us. And we just tend not to talk to them. You know, the whole game at the UN is gathering your friends together and blocking the things that the left want. And so the trick is always finding enough of your friends who are willing to stand up and speak and block things. And that's what we've done now for 20 years.
So actually the kind of saturation of media coverage we're getting on LGBT issues, I'm sorry that's even entered into the vocabulary, but there it is.
Yeah.
And pro-abortion, so-called women's rights, doesn't really reflect what's going on at the United Nations.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that is that, you know, the left in the United States and the left in Europe are really not a part of a real global conversation, because the global conversation is about faith.
Well, tell us what you mean by that.
You know, because people speak from their faith beliefs. I mean, and the left is that they're so secular and driving their secular agenda that they're really not a part of the real conversation that happens in the world. They are, you know, there's this amazing Israeli political philosopher named Yoram Hazony, who has written a remarkable essay called What is Conservatism, wrote a column in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago, Taking Apart the Enlightenment, has a new book coming out in September called The Virtue of Nationalism. And
Yes, I saw that.
He's very plain about how, you know, the UN is an empire, and he guards nationalism, properly understood, very jealously. And so these relatively small groups of people at Turtle Bay and in Brussels are trying to impose their sexual revolution on the whole world, and the whole world doesn't want it. You know, the whole world wants, you know, families and their faith, and this is how they live. And the secularists at Turtle Bay and Brussels are really a tiny minority trying to export their agenda on the whole world. So that's what they mean, that they're really not a part of the genuine global conversation.
Well, Austin, I'm gonna conclude there, because it's very upbeat, very hopeful thing that you're telling me, telling our listeners, and I'm completely enthralled, and I want you to come back sometime soon to talk about the fact that you just said the global conversation is about faith, about religion, and we need to talk some more about that, because, frankly, I'm not hearing that, but you're obviously in a place at the UN and other places that CFAM works where you are hearing that and you see that firsthand.
Yep.
So you'll come back?
I'll just tell you, what, you know, that one of the books that I'm working on next is called No Finer Time to Be a Faithful Catholic. And as I said to Mother Assumpta today, we are blessed to be here right now at a time that everything seems so desperate, because there's halos hanging from the lowest branches of the trees.
So all we have to do is grab the low-hanging fruit, as it were.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Austin Roos, president of CFAM, thanks for being on Church and Culture once again, and I'll see you Saturday night.
We will be there with bells on.
Thank you. To all you are listening, join me on this day and this time next week.
If you have any comments or questions about Church and Culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.